Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, as part of our series on death and dying, we did a show about the Stanford Letter Project and your end-of-life wishes. Today, we're discussing the importance of getting your financial and legal affairs in order to ensure you and your loved ones are prepared. This is also so important in case you become incapacitated. According to Trust and Wills 2025 Estate Planning Report, a will, the most common estate planning document, is held by just 31% of Americans, while only 11% have a trust. In total, 55% of Americans have no estate plan at all, leaving their wishes and their loved ones unprotected. Dying without a plan places an enormous burden on your loved ones, who may be forced into complex and expensive legal proceedings while they are grieving. The lack of clarity can also cause serious damage to the relationships of your loved ones, who may disagree on how to move forward. So what documents should you have in place in preparation for the end of your life, or if you become incapacitated? What steps can you take now to ensure you and your loved ones are protected and prepared? Craig Parker is a trust and estate attorney who has been helping individuals and their families with their end-of-life financial needs since the year 2000. He's Assistant General Counsel for Trust and Will. That's an online platform that allows you to create, manage, and distribute estate plans. Previously, Craig Parker ran his own practice in California and served as an adjunct professor of estate, probate, and trust law at UC Riverside Extension. Hi, Craig. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. John Kithis runs his own law firm, which helps individuals prepare wills, estates, and trusts. John has been a member of the San Francisco Marin Lawyer Referral and Information Service, the oldest and largest public service program of the Bar Association of San Francisco, which seeks to provide information and attorney referrals to people in need since 2001. Hi, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Rose. Good to be with you.
Well, great to have you. I want to give out the phone number to our listeners because this is such an important issue. If you have any questions or comments about getting your end-of-life financial documents in order, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So you both have been in this field for a long time. Why do you think that so many people do not have their end-of-life financial and legal affairs in order, given what's at stake? The fact that people could be pushed into probate court, or siblings can greatly disagree. I've been reading stories about siblings who no longer talk because of these issues. What are your thoughts on this, John?
I think people don't like to face their mortality. For one thing, they just keep putting it off. There's the expectation that we're all going to live forever, back in the back of our minds, and so you don't want to face that. The second thing is it's very complicated when you start getting into it. When you realize, you know, what are your assets? Who do you want to give things to? How is it all going to be spread out? And so there is a tendency for people to shy away from trying to resolve those issues until they're really faced with a do or die situation.
What would you add, Craig? What do you hear from your clients and then hear from others who just have put this off and don't want to deal with it?
Yeah, a couple of things. In addition to that is that often people have this conception that it's about somebody that they don't have enough assets, that really, you know, their life is simple and that they don't have a lot of assets. But this type of planning is—it's not really about assets. I always tell people it's really about the people around you, your friends and your family. It's about people, and this is a gift that you give to them by doing these things. You're really helping it to make it easier for them when you become sick and they want to help you, or when you pass away and they're going through grief. You can greatly alleviate that time for your friends and family if you just do a little bit of planning.
What would you say to those who think, I don't have, we use the word estate, right? And when you think of estate, you think of a big home, a lot of things, a massive bank account. I mean, these days, talking about an estate, you can talk about five homes. But what about people who hear that word estate and think that doesn't apply to me because I don't have much? I might have a bank account, maybe don't own a home, but maybe they have some amazing family heirlooms. So what would you say, Craig, to people who think it doesn't apply to me because I don't have an estate?
Yeah, I like to actually turn it around on people and say, do you have family and friends? Do you have people that you care about? Because estate planning really is about that. It's not about what the objects that you have to give to them. It's really about giving to them peace, you know, a simpler solution when you run into these problems, because it's not just death, as you pointed out. It could also be that you become incapacitated. If you become sick and you need help, your friends and family are going to want to help you. But if you haven't done, for instance, an advanced healthcare directive, you haven't named somebody to speak to the doctors to deal with those issues when you can't, you're basically leaving them to struggle, and I've seen that, and try to help you, but you're not giving them the tools to do it. And so really it's about thinking about the people around you. And all of us have a legacy, whether what we have relationships that we built, and we want to leave that legacy intact. And we should think about how we want to do that. But it's much more than just the things that we give to people. It's really about those relationships. And we want to make it easy on people when things happen to us.
This is so important because a lot of people think, well, I'm in my 20s, 30s, 40s. I don't need to do this yet. But as you just said, a healthcare directive is important in case something happens to you and you want to ensure that a specific loved one is able to speak for you. So can you talk more about that, Craig? The importance of a healthcare directive and what you have seen if that is not in place?
Sure. A common situation is, you know, even in my own family, you know, my wife always went with my daughters to the doctor. Many of you probably have that experience. And, you know, your kid turns 18 and you still think they're your kid, right? And you don't realize in California, they now have privacy rights that have come into play with HIPAA rights and other things with the doctors. So they go away to school or they go away out of state. And all of a sudden, they have a health issue. And maybe they're in Europe and they're doing this great trip, or they're often people in their 20s or are more likely to have an injury, or, you know, they're mountain climbing somewhere. Well, who's going to come to help them? Their family and their friends. And some of those parents are shocked when they get to the college and they say, we can't give you any information about their health situation. You know, they get to the hospital and they say, I'm sorry. And they're like, what? You know, like I'm their parent. So having an advanced healthcare directive, which is a simple document that really can just take a few minutes to fill out and doesn't even have to cost anything. There are many places you can get it for free, is something that even someone as soon as they're 18 should have, and makes it much easier on all the people around them to be able to help them in that dire situation. I've seen, especially when people are in that situation and they call attorneys and their son is in ICU and they can't speak and they say, I need this help. And we say, you know, now you're in a situation where you have to go into court. You've got to get a conservatorship or guardianship. And those processes are very expensive. We're talking now thousands of dollars, and we're having to go to court and do all of that. So people don't realize how simple it can be to do something that can really help the people around you.
This is important. And John, one of the reasons why we're doing these shows is because I sadly lost my dad a few months ago. And I helped my dad 3 years ago when he had a life-saving surgery. And at that time, I believe it was because of that healthcare directive, I was put on it was his name, obviously, first, and then it was my name. And so if I had to call Providence or whatever hospital, Stanford, I was able to call them and get information because he approved that. But not everyone does this. And you don't want to wait until something happens and you call and you just can't get the information. So can you talk about that? I mean, this is a the wills and the trust are one thing, but making sure that you have access and you're able to access your loved one's records is also very important. But you have to make sure you do that while your loved one can approve it. And a lot of people just don't think of these things.
Yeah, that's right. It's something, especially when you're dealing with younger people. As I said earlier, we all think we're going to live forever, especially when you're in your 20s. And it's just a simple thing, as Craig mentioned. I would add to that that also you should have a conversation with the person you're giving the directive to. I have had clients who have complained to me that their parents just said, oh, I'll sign, and you know, you get to decide. Well, you need to tell that person how you feel about things. I have a standard form that I use that I send to my clients, and it has a range of options, all the way from, you know, spend every last penny I have to keep me alive, all the way to make me comfortable and make me make sure I have a good quality of life, and then let me go. So when you have those detailed conversations, you can either talk to that person and inform them if that's satisfactory, or put it in detail in the document so that there is a clear understanding of what you really want. And in addition, sometimes I put something in there to identify persons who you do not want to have any power over those decisions. If there's somebody who is you think might be meddling in your health affairs that you don't want.
If people who have not thought about this or have not started the process, where should they start so they're not overwhelmed, because there is so much information out there? Craig, where should people start?
Well, of course, that's what we're trying to do at Trust and Wills is most people go online for their education these days or want to learn. There is a vast amount of information. Sometimes it can be overwhelming. But as one of the leading providers nationwide, all 50 states, we have a Learn Center on our website where you can go on to trustandwill.com and you can research these topics, read about them, educate yourself. And the truth is that you can sit down, and one great thing about the internet is you don't necessarily have to do it at, you know, between 9 and 5. You can go on there after work, 2 in the morning, 3, whenever you it's convenient for you, and get on there and start working on it for yourself and look at it. You can look at the documents, look at what they say. It's amazing in the statistics from the recent survey that we did, nearly half of the people that begin like doing a will, only half of them ever complete it. And so a lot of times that's just because of the barriers of getting to an office to talk to someone, or the barriers of maybe cost. So we're trying, of course, to democratize the process, make it simpler for people in a way that they can access it. Most of us are doing a lot of our banking online, a lot of things online, TurboTax, et cetera. This is a way to go on and to start doing a document like that. And you can do it very economically.
And we'll talk more about that a little later in the show, just about costs and how you all ensure that this is safe online. That is Craig Parker, General Counsel for Trust and Will. We're also joined by John Kithis, who runs his own law firm. They help individuals prepare wills, estates, and trusts. And today we're talking about the importance of getting your financial and legal affairs in order to ensure you and your loved ones are prepared. But even that word end of life, it just brings up a lot of different images for people. I mean, this is important in case you become incapacitated. As we're learning, it's important at any age, because any of us can get sick and end up in the hospital and not be able to express our wishes. And so it's important to have documents in place if that ever happens. John, what are your thoughts? What advice would you give people who just don't know where to start?
Well, go to your local bar association. I'm on the panel of the bar association, and they refer cases to me. But my agreement, and that of other lawyers on the panel, is to give a free half hour's advice. You pay the bar association $35 to set up the meeting. But I would suggest that people get online, educate themselves, give themselves some time to think through, you know, what are my assets? Who are my beneficiaries? And who do I want to have handle things when I am unable to do my estate myself? And then with that preparation, you can get pretty far along with a lawyer who can tell you, you know, give you answers to the questions that you might have, give you guidance. And if you wish to retain the lawyer, then you can make arrangements to retain them and have the documents drafted up.
Well, if you have any questions about healthcare directives, power of attorney, wills and trusts, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You definitely do not want to have to deal with this if your loved one is very sick and you know that they might be dying. It's just the last thing that you're going to want to deal with. And then if they don't have anything in place and they do pass, it can be really difficult. I have some friends who are dealing with probate because their parent did not have a will or a trust in place. And it's going to be a really difficult process. I mean, it already is a difficult process for them. So this is something you definitely want to take care of soon. It's really never too early, no matter how old you are. We have a few callers on the line. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Annie in Mountain View. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I've got the papers set up and they were notarized and so on, but now I want to add beneficiaries and remove some. Do I have to pay someone to do that, or can I just have an addendum and have that notarized? What is that process like? Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. John, what if you want to change beneficiaries? How do you go about doing that?
It's a fairly simple process, generally speaking. You know, there can be complexities involved, so I don't know any more detail with regard to the question, but if it's just a simple matter of adding Susie and giving her $5,000, then that's usually a one or two page document that indicates that you want to amend your trust. Typically, the form that I use is one that refers to the paragraph in the trust that allows you to make the amendment. And then second, after that, to identify the paragraph that you're amending as specifically as you possibly can, and then sign it in front of a notary and have it notarized.
Anything to add, Craig?
Yeah, I think this is one of the barriers for a lot of people, right? Is I've done this type of planning for 25 years. I've dealt with a high volume of probates, hundreds of them. But making a simple change sometimes can be intimidating. It also prevents people from even doing it in the first place because they're so worried that they're putting something in stone, it's going to be hard to change. I think that's where technology can help a lot. Our members can get on their platform, so to speak, and make changes online anytime, 24 hours a day. They can have mobile notaries or go to a local notary. And so, like John says, the change can be very simple. If it is simple, it should be simple to do and economical. And you have lots of options now. On our platform, people can also get referred to a local attorney. They can go in person. They could also meet with them on Zoom or on the phone. And so maybe it's a quick 15-minute conversation to do something. So you have a lot more options and ways to control your costs.
All right. Well, I hope that helps, Annie. And you can find information at kalw.org. Click news and then your call. We have a very important email from Ed who writes, I have started this process with an attorney, but I'm finding a lot of fear and emotions that come up every time I start working on these documents. How do you suggest clients deal with these strong emotions? Do you want to take that first, Craig?
Yeah, that's hard. It is hard. I think for each of us, it can be a different experience and everybody reacts differently to thinking about these things. I think it helps to have a close friend or somebody that you feel like you can rely on and talk to bounce some of those things off. it's also fine for them to support you and go with you if you want. The attorney, as long as they have authorization from you, you're allowed to bring a support person or somebody could help, you know, be there with you. And sometimes it just helps to have that person that your closest, you know, person you rely on that can just reassure you that it's okay to make these decisions. And ultimately, like I said, you're really doing it for them because you're not going to be around. And even if you are, if you're disabled, you may be unconscious. So you're giving this gift to the people around you by doing this planning. And I find, again, that people get paralyzed because they feel like it's a final decision. You can change your mind in a couple days, make a change, or a week or a month, and you should be revising it, frequently looking at it and updating it. And again, with technology, that should be simple to do, and we need to make it simpler.
What would you add, John?
I think that first I preface this by saying I'm not a psychologist, but I like Craig's recommendations. I would add to that that what appears to be a large task is often best approached in small pieces. You could, for example, spend some time getting a list of your assets together to make sure you have all of that, and then give yourself a week or two and then decide, you know, who are your beneficiaries going to be? Who do you want to have whatever assets? How do you want them to get it? Is there somebody who should have a trustee over their assets because they're either too young or not sufficiently sharp about these things to do this kind of thing on their own? And then to think about who is it that you would want to identify to be your trustee to handle these affairs, somebody that you think is going to be good, and to perhaps spend some time talking with the people that you are thinking about to tell them what you're thinking and ask their advice about how you can best help them in terms of how you draft your testamentary documents. And then I think if you do it in small bites, you can ultimately eat the elephant.
Well, thank you for that important question, Ed. And I understand the strong emotions just having gone through it recently. And I really wish you the best and good luck. And I'm glad that you actually started this process because, again, your loved ones will be able to actually grieve rather than have to deal with the legal issues around this. It's just, there's so much. Sometimes you don't even know where to start. After the break, we'll talk about things that you don't really think about until you're in this place. And, you know, I'm very lucky that I was able to talk to my dad about these issues, but you think about a basic checking account. How do you access that? All of the passwords on his phone and the subscriptions he had. There's just so many different things that you have to deal with that we most of us just don't think about. In fact, we got an email from a listener on one of our shows last week, and they said that they were very mad at Apple because Apple would not share their loved one's passwords. And so this listener wasn't able to access all of the subscription services and cancel them. And that can add up. And this listener said that they actually went to Seven on Your Side to force Apple to give these passwords. So Craig, you've been doing this for a long time. There's so much new information and things that we need to take care of today that we didn't really need to deal with 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even just 5 years ago, I didn't have very many people that came with those kind of issues like passwords and stuff. But within the last short while here, we've seen a huge increase. And people needing to have that access. And while maybe this next generation too, even more so, their life is online. And so we specifically deal with digital assets. If you look at our platform, Trust and Will, and we even talk about in our documents about naming what's called a digital executor. But yes, you need to put in writing so that you can get access now to all of those things. So you have documents that will authorize you to be able to access and give that to Apple and to, you know, Netflix and whoever, and they will then listen to you so that you can adjust or change those things, even if somebody just gets sick and they're in the hospital and maybe they're going to be there several months or getting rehabilitation, and they can't benefit from some of those services and they can't afford them. So if you've named somebody with a power of attorney with ability to deal with those digital companies as well as all their other landlord and their other issues, those are really important at a time when you won't be able to do it. And again, this is a gift that you're giving to your family and friends, the people that are trying to be there for you in your moment of need. And so right now, it's a way for you to give back to them right now and do some simple planning that will help make it so much easier.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we are talking about the importance of getting your financial and legal affairs in order to ensure you and your loved ones are prepared. And this applies to you no matter how old you are, because this is very important in case you become incapacitated. Today, we're joined by Craig Parker, Assistant General Counsel for Trust and Will, an online platform that allows you to create, manage, and distribute estate plans. John Kithis runs his own law firm. He's been a member of the San Francisco Marin Lawyer Referral and Information Service since 2001. They're a public service program of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and they seek to provide information and attorney referrals to people in need. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll continue our health series by speaking with Jonathan and Fafilia Nez, the former president and first lady of the Navajo Nation. We'll learn more about food justice activism and efforts to reverse and end chronic disease in Indian country. Jonathan Nez has a very interesting story about how he drastically changed his diet after being called out at a meeting by a young person. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email your call at kalw.org. Today, we continue our series on death and dying by talking about the importance of getting your financial and legal affairs in order. This is also important in case you become incapacitated. If you have any questions or comments for today's guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Craig Parker, Assistant General for Trust and Will, an online platform that allows you to create, manage, and distribute estate plans. John Kithis runs his own law firm and helps people prepare wills, estates, and trusts. Let's also talk about wills and trusts. John, can you tell us first about the difference between a will and a trust and why for some people it's a good idea to have both?
Yeah, sure. The trust is these days the governing document. It's simply I refer to it with my clients as the corporation of client, and you appoint yourself as the president of the corporation and you're in charge of everything. And then you identify certain successor trustees who step in for you and act in your stead as the president of the corporation of the client in order to deal with your assets as you have directed in your trust. Trusts are good, generally recognized, for two reasons. One is that they're less expensive than going through probate. Generally speaking, if you have to probate your estate, if you have to go to court, that there are statutory fees that must be paid to both the lawyer and the executor of the will. And those are a sliding scale percentage, but those fees, if you've got $1 million estate, are generally $25,000 per person. So you're winding up spending $50,000 to have your estate handled when it could be done for less by spending a few hundred or $1,000 to get a trust in place. And so it's a money saver, and it tends more to keep you out of court. The other reason to have a trust is that it's not a public document. So if there are things that you don't want the whole world to know, then you put them in a trust and give directions in the trust. That doesn't mean that there might not be some issue that pops up later on that winds up dragging you into court and exposing the terms of your trust and costing you money, but it at least reduces the chances. And so the other thing is with regard to the wills, the wills that I draft almost uniformly now are what are known as pour over wills. And the pour over will simply says, if for some reason the trust cannot be implemented, then this will adopts the provisions of the trust, and I want my estate to be probated according to those terms. You're still stuck in court, but your wishes are stated in the trust, and you can go forward with the district, or your executor or trustee can go forward with the distribution of your estate. Another document that's important that I think I should mention is a power of attorney. And there are two types. One is the power of attorney for financial matters. Another is a power of attorney for healthcare. We've talked about the healthcare power. The power of attorney for financial matters is in effect as long as you are alive. It goes away when you pass. But some institutions, in my experience, prefer dealing with somebody that has the financial power of attorney rather than someone who is a trustee. Often that's because there's some question as to whether or not, certain things have happened in terms of the trust to empower the trustee, whereas a financial power of attorney, typically the way I draft them, it gives automatic rights to the person who is given the power of attorney, and they can take care of various things if the principal person is not able to do so.
And Craig, should people have both a will and a trust? How should they make that decision?
Yeah, that's a good question because, truthfully, everybody's situation is a little bit different. And so I think you, at the beginning of the program, you talked about, a person who might think, well, I don't own any real property. I'm renting right now. And so I don't need to do any estate planning. But the truth is that you still would want to do at least a will. The will can be very important because if you have bank accounts or an employer to deal with, or, like you mentioned, just some personal objects of sentimental value, a will is a way for you to express where you want those things to go and for you to empower somebody to be able to take care and wrap up those issues. You can also state, for instance, wishes as to what you would want to happen with your remains. So I know that today there's a lot of people recently that have, are talking about donating their body to science, as an example. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a noble decision, and it might be an important one to you. But if you don't put that in writing, nobody has legal authority to do that. And if you have a strong preference for being buried or having a certain, religious service, all those things are very important for you to put into writing. If you don't, all you're doing is, number one, leaving no one with authority to take care of that. And two, like you mentioned, disputes. And the worst thing you can do is to leave your family with a legacy of being separated or having conflict and hard feelings, or your friends, just because you couldn't take a few minutes to put in writing what you wanted done.
Yeah, such important points. Since we're talking about wills and trust, we have an email from a listener who says, my mom put her house, which is paid off, in a trust. My sister is planning to move in a few years. How should we deal with this? Should we change the name of the homeowner? Will our property taxes go up? Craig, do you want to take that?
Yeah, well, it sounds like it depends on the situation, but it sounds like if their mother has already passed away, then the terms of the trust should dictate where that asset is to go. And if typically it's to go equally to these two daughters, then they should have already taken care of that step as far as retitling the property into their names. If it was a residence, under Prop 13 in California, there are some ways that you can try to keep your property taxes lower. They've restricted that more recently, so you have to look into the specific rules and whether you could qualify and fill out the paperwork. But it should go into your names. And then if you want to allow your sister to live there, just like any other business partner now that you're in it together, this can be difficult, is you're going to have to figure out, do you sell the property? Do you allow one person to live there? Are you going to charge rent? These are other things that aren't uncommon that come up. I will tell you that that's one reason why I would say the majority of people end up having just liquidating and dividing and letting somebody take their share and get their own place. But for some people, that might work out really great for them. So I would just encourage them to open up the dialogue and make sure that they have taken care of the terms of the trust.
Well, thank you for the email. Let's go to a caller, Isabella in Hillsburg. Hi, Isabella. Thank you for holding.
Thank you. I wanted to find out if you need a lawyer when you have had a trust already and you need to revise it.
All right. So do you need a lawyer if you have a trust and you want to revise it? John?
It kind of depends on the revisions. As we spoke earlier, if it's a simple matter of adding niece Susie to your trust, you can usually do it in a page or two, have it drafted out, refer to the powers in the trust that allow you to make the amendment, then refer to the paragraph in the trust that you're amending in some fashion and have it notarized, and you're in pretty good shape. You might be able to find some forms online even for that sort of thing. I hesitate to recommend that, but it is a simple enough matter if the issue is and the amendment is simple. So that's it. And I would add, there was something I was thinking about earlier when Craig was talking about wills and having the will distribute items of personal importance and sentimental value, that sort of thing. I still rely on the trust, because if you have a will, it means in order to comply with the law, you have to probate that will. You have to go to court, typically. There are some ways around that if the estate doesn't have real property and is less in value than $185,000. These are what are called a summary administration, where you can pass those things along. But it's, if there is sufficient value, it behooves you, I think, to have the distribution handled in a trust.
All right. Thank you for that question. Go ahead.
May I ask something
else? Sure.
Okay. My mom passed 11 years ago. There was three of us on her trust, and that would be for the house. And my sister had lived with my mom all her life. And so, of course, my brother and I said, for sure, you live in the house until whatever, you want to do. Now, I don't believe that she switched the title. I know we're not on it because we don't get anything, but we didn't think about that. And what I wanted to find out was, because I'm sure my mom's name is still on it and she just pays taxes and all of that. So is that going to be a problem when the house is sold, or, when she passes, or when she decides to go somewhere else?
Craig, can you take that?
Yeah, that's not totally uncommon, and it is important. So when you have a trust, the trust is supposed to be when the principal person, who is the person who created the trust, typically when they pass away, you're supposed to then distribute out or change the assets and distribute them to the people who are the beneficiaries. And sometimes when there's a house, people don't get around to doing that, but you need to make sure that there's new deeds that get created. The trustee needs to sign a new deed deeding the property to the beneficiaries. And so if the beneficiaries are all three of you, you'd all three be on the property together. And these are the types of things that you want to clean up, because first of all, you need to do that as part of a duty to fulfill the law, but you can also run into problems with the tax, property taxes you mentioned paying. You're going to find that there could be a supplemental tax bill that's just waiting, sitting out there to be paid, because they may not be have been notified that this property is now in all three of your names. So it's wise to take care of those things. And so you should definitely get some advice on how to wrap that up with the house.
Wow. So the house then should not stay in the trust. It should go into the names of those who are supposed to receive it.
Correct. Most of the time. Now, of course, you got to look at the terms of the trust, because maybe the terms of the trust say otherwise. But even if the terms of the trust were to give the house to somebody for their lifetime, you would still, you know, make sure that you followed through with the documentation that that's happened. And so, yes, there's more than just leaving. You don't want to leave any property in the name of a deceased person. You want to look at, have you transferred that now to the next beneficiaries?
And how do you go about doing that?
Again, you could, you would want to get some help. So you could go online, educate yourself again. But ultimately, you're probably going to need to see an attorney to get some advice about how it is that you're going to get it out of the name of the trust and into your individual names.
All right. Well, thank you. Very important questions. There's a lot of complexities to all of this. We have so many emails, so let's go through as many as we can.
Rose, if I could just add one more complexity.
Yes, John.
I echo everything that Craig said, but the other thing that needs to be thought about is Isabel dealing with this property in her estate? If the trust says that she gets one-third interest in the property, not only should she transfer that property into her name, but it should also be included in her trust so that she can direct what is going to happen to that property and whether or not it can be used to help her in any way.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you. I hope that helps. We have a number of questions from listeners. Robin writes, I'm helping my parents who have health issues. They have not done estate planning and think California law will allow assets to naturally pass to my mom in the event my dad passes first. Does this sound correct? I don't want to get stuck in probate or have trouble paying their rent. I know how challenging that is. John?
No, that's not correct. You would be in a situation which is called intestate succession, which is people that don't have any testamentary documents. What the law says is that upon the death of one of the spouses, if there's no documentation, the half of the property, as it depends on how many children there are, but generally speaking, you can say half the property goes to the surviving spouse and the other half goes to the kids. And there are impacts, tax impacts, that can hit you in that kind of situation. So it's not necessarily something that Robin's parents are going to want to do. So I would certainly recommend that they get a trust and a will and whatever other documents they think they might need.
And Robin says, what steps should I do to help them because they're hesitant to do estate planning?
Mm-hmm. Well, sit down and talk with them. And again, there's the three things. What are my assets? Where do I want them to go? And who do I want to be in charge when I am no longer able to handle my estate? You get those general things out of the way, and then you can go to attorney or Craig's company and see what you can do to put that in writing.
Well, thank you for that question. All of these questions are making me think about a written will. What if you write down your wishes and sign it and date it? Does that hold up in court, Craig?
Yeah, in most jurisdictions and in California, we do recognize what are called holographic wills, which means that the document must all be in your own handwriting and like you said, dated and signed. And I would say that is better than doing nothing. Writing out what your wishes are can be really super important. And as far as it being legally upheld, I've personally probated in court. I've helped people go to court with a holographic documents, even one that was on a post-it note, you know, that was written. And the judge was able to find that as a testamentary, you know, as a will. Now, did that solve all the problems? It didn't, because we still had to go through court. It was expensive. But it did make sure that the person's wishes in that particular case, they wanted it their assets to go to a particular person. And that happened. So you're at least doing something. You're taking those steps. But I would encourage everybody, like I said, to take a few minutes, get on their computer, look at this information as far as how to start. And you're going to find, for instance, on trust and will, you can take like 5 minutes and work on it and then go back to it later. You can do a little at a time. And when you get stuck, you could get referral to an attorney, ask questions, talk to a local attorney, have them review things if you have questions about them. But it's a way for you to get started and to get going rather than feeling paralyzed and not doing anything.
Mm. Well, thank you, Robin. I really hope that helps. Thinking of you and your parents. Let's go next to another email. I have a will and have put all of my property in a trust. A major issue for me is finding an executor. I feel that no family members can take this on or are willing to do it. How do I find one? Do you want to take that, John?
Yeah, sort of. This is a very common problem, because often people will, for example, select someone amongst their friends. And so they tend to be the same age as the person. So I usually will recommend that they also have a younger person as a successor trustee if the first person they name is not going to be available. So it's always good to have backup, 1, 2, 3, whatever makes sense to you. But it's something that you need to think about first. Who is going to be competent enough to handle something like this? Who is going to be willing to handle it? And then you should sit down and have a conversation with them to make sure that they understand what you're expecting of them, whether or not they're going to be compensated for what they do, you know, how you want your assets distributed, and you know, to get clear with them so that you are comfortable that things are going to be handled when you're not able to do it yourself, and that they are comfortable that they understand what they're getting themselves into.
A number of people are emailing, says, do you have any recommendations for a lawyer who can answer these questions at an affordable price? So we're getting a lot of questions about, you know, people without children, about couples, conservancy. There's just a lot of questions out there. So, Craig, how can people go about getting their specific questions answered with a lawyer? Where can we find those resources?
Yeah. So, as John said at the beginning, I always tell people that the best place to go to always start is the Bar Association, your local Bar Association of your county, because they will have a list of attorneys who are you know, vetted, that are qualified, and that don't have any complaints against them. You know, when you're just looking, you know, at online or at all the ads and websites, it gets confusing as to try to figure out who's really reputable. And we all know that's what our biggest concern is this somebody who's going to be reputable? So if somebody has a complaint against them, if a client complains against an attorney, that goes through the Bar Association. They're going to be aware, and the state bar is going to be aware, and you're going to be able to look online about, if you research on the state bar website, anybody that has any kind of complaint or process. So I always tell people, be careful about going to a phone book or going online. Go to the Bar Association and get some names, and then you can call around and check. I also want to say that, like I said, on our site is a way for you to start if you want to get some education. And we have a way where, you know, you could choose to just speak to an attorney for 30 minutes and just pay for that time, or In other words, you can do a little bit of it on your own, and this could help lower the cost for you. And then you could have something reviewed by an attorney, or when you get stuck and you have a question, we can then refer you to a local attorney who's been vetted. And this can be a way for you to reduce your costs. And so I would, today there's a lot of ways to do that, and using technology can help bring down the costs. And frankly, it can be costly, but just like anything else that you're looking into, you can find ways today by looking at technology and finding ways to help lower those costs.
Any other tips, John? We have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I would say it's a good idea to talk to your friends. Find out if they have used a lawyer, and if they have an estate, and if they recommend that lawyer. If they've had a good experience, chances are you'll have a good experience too.
Great advice. Thank you. John Kithis runs his own law firm and helps individuals prepare wills, estates, and trusts. He's been a member of the San Francisco Marin Lawyer Referral and Information Service, which seeks to provide information and attorney referrals to people in need since 2001. Craig Parker is Assistant General Counsel for Trust and Will, an online platform that allows you to create, manage, and distribute estate plans. John and Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful time.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your questions. I'm really sorry we didn't get to all of them, but I hope this information helped. You can find resources at kalw.org, click news, and then your call. Thanks to Nina Kissinger for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And we hope you can join us tomorrow with Jonathan and Fafilia Nez, the former president and first lady of the Navajo Nation. They'll talk about food justice activism and efforts to reverse and end chronic disease an Indian country. That's tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.